Ruth chapter 3 on Through the Word today. We are halfway through our little love story, and the chemistry is starting to cook. Ruth and Boaz have met, and they definitely have eyes for each other. Now, when I was a teenager, there was a step between like and love, and we called it like-like. I was never sure what it meant to like a girl, but I'm pretty sure that Ruth and Boaz are there. They've gone past the flirting to real caring and kindness. But thus far, there's no commitment. And without commitment, the story stops here. But who will make the next move? Fortunately, Ruth has a Jewish mother-in-law. And if no one else is going to move, Naomi will get this thing rolling. Before I get to verse 1, I should mention that today's study does cover some adult issues. So kids, hit stop now and let your parents check it out before you listen. Now, in verse 1. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor." So Naomi wants to play matchmaker. No subtle hints from this Yenta, just pure meddling. I have enough Jewish moms in my family to know that they are not afraid to meddle. Now they always mind their own business. But if your family, you are their business. Naomi has thought this through, and she has a plan. At the end of verse 2, that plan begins at the threshing floor. To follow the flow of the story here, pay attention to the change of season and change of location. Chapter 1 begins with a famine and leaving God's country for the world. Out in the world, love is lost, and our two women are left alone. Chapter 2 is the harvest. And love springs forth in the harvest field, back in the promised land. But in the last verse, the harvest is over. So what comes next? Chapter 3, and the threshing floor. Now, for those of us who aren't farmers, the threshing floor was where the harvesters separated the edible grain from the inedible chaff. Picture a large flat floor, either outside or in an open structure, with large piles of barley sheaves. They threshed by stomping the grain, then winnowed by tossing it in the air, and the chaff blew away. The threshing floor is used throughout the Bible as a symbol of separation and a place of judgment. It's a powerful picture, and it is no coincidence that God meets with heroes like Gideon and David on a threshing floor. It is a place of commitment, a place where God separates the good from the bad, and man makes a decision about what to let go and what to hold fast. Now, our story in Ruth is a love story, so what does a threshing floor have to do with romance? Let's find out. In verse 3, Naomi tells Ruth to get all cleaned up and pretty and head down to the threshing floor where Boaz will be. But she tells Ruth to wait until after he eats and finishes his workday. Then in verse 4, "When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Curious instruction, but Ruth did everything that her mother-in-law told her to. There's a great tag team here of young and old, the passion of youth with the wisdom of age. And so Ruth found herself lying down in the threshing floor, right at the feet of sleeping Boaz. Then in verse 8, "In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. 'Who are you?' he asked. 'I am your servant Ruth,' she said. 'Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family.'" That last phrase is crucial. Ruth asks Boaz to spread his garment over her. The word there means the end of a long cloak, and there's a lot of meaning to it. For a man of authority like Boaz, the end of the cloak would often bear a symbol or a signet of his authority, much like a military man wears stripes on his shoulder. So this gesture of covering with the corner of the garment was powerfully symbolic of covering with authority. Ruth was asking to come under the wings of Boaz for care and protection. In other words, our girl was laying down some serious hints because Ruth wants Boaz to propose. For his part, Boaz is elated. He feels so blessed that Ruth chose him. And in verse 11, he says, "And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. So there's a problem. Boaz definitely wants to marry Ruth. But that law of the guardian redeemer had specific directions. Basically, Boaz was indeed a near kin to the deceased husband, but there was one closer relative. According to their tradition, that closer relative had first chance to redeem Ruth, as well as the property that belonged to Ruth's husband. Boaz wants to marry Ruth, but he insists on doing it properly, following tradition and following God's rules. Boaz even risks losing the girl to get this right. Let that be a lesson for any hopeful romantics out there. Don't ever allow the fear of losing your chance at love to drive you to break God's rules. Listen to the words that Boaz uses to make his promise. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Boaz bases his promise on a living Lord, and he refuses to act as if the living God can't see what he's doing. Think about it. Who wrote the book of love in the first place? God created love, and he gave us all that is beautiful about romance. If you want your love story to be a good one, let God be the author, and always follow his rules and his wisdom. Love is not an exact science, and there is no prescription that makes everything work perfectly. Every story is different, but there are rules. Marriage, love, and sex have an order that works, ordained by God. And what about that? As we follow the progress of love and marriage in our story, where does sex enter the picture? If this were a movie, the threshing floor scene would certainly be the time for it. That's the movie formula for love. A little kindness, a little flirting and fun, then seal the deal by jumping in bed. Movie script writers almost always let you know that a couple is definitely in love with a sex scene. If you're not careful, that cinematic notion that sex proves love will get into your head, and it's dangerous. In the movie, everyone wakes up happy, but real life doesn't work out that way. The Bible has that storyline when David's son Amnon refuses to marry Tamar before sleeping with her, and that story ends very badly. Back in Ruth, verse 14 has Boaz telling her to be careful to leave early so that no one gets the wrong idea. He wants to keep his relationship pure in God's eyes as well as the eyes of the neighbors. When Ruth heads home, Naomi's final instruction to Ruth in verse 18 is, wait, let him prove his commitment before moving ahead. If he's the right man, then he'll do the right thing. Naomi is talking about the redemption process, but it applies to other aspects of romance as well. See, the movie love story implies that sex seals the deal, then marriage celebrates it at the end. But in God's plan, marriage seals the deal, then sex celebrates it. The world says fall in love, then have sex, then get married. But then what? God says get married, then have sex, then give love for the rest of your life. Now that's a happier ending. It works, and it gives you a whole lifetime to celebrate. True love waits. Now, if you are like me and got it wrong before you even knew the difference, or even if you knew better and still messed up, then call on the God of all mercy, for only he can take what is broken and redeem it. I praise the living God that mine is a story of undeserved grace and a whole lot of redemption. Read Ruth 3 today, and as you do, consider your threshing floor. That goes for your romantic relationship as well as your walk with God. You can't hang out in that like-like phase forever. Every covenant relationship must have a threshing floor moment, a point of separation and commitment. A singular moment of decision of what to hold on to and what to let go. Back in the harvest field, it's all flirting and fun, but there's no commitment. In your walk with Jesus, are you forever hanging out in that harvest field, or will you come to the threshing floor to commit, ready to let go of the chaff and come under the wings of your one true Redeemer?
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.